And it's time to turn to the obituaries for today. First up, Thomas Markle of Urbandale. Thomas Wayne Markle, age 57, passed away peacefully at his home January 23rd. A gathering for friends and family will be from 5 to 7, Friday the 28th, at Isles Westover Chapel. Memorial contributions may be directed to the family. Darlene McBride Godinier of Urbandale. Darlene Irma McBride Godinier, aged 93, passed away at her home in Urbandale after a brief battle with lung cancer on Tuesday, January 18. She was born December 20, 1928, to Lewis and Wanda Vaverka in Grinnell. Darlene held many jobs, but retired from Carrier in 1990. She enjoyed spending time with her family and friends, finding garage sale deals, reading, watching her birds, and traveling. She was devoted to her family and friends. You never left her home without a meal or something to take with you. Darlene was hardworking, tough, patient, kind, honest, generous, wise, feisty, warm-hearted, and most of all, she never judged you. Darlene leaves behind her daughter, Kim, and Brian Quinlan of Urbandale, son Rick Godinier of Des Moines, sister Gloria Vakarix of Ontario, California, her grandchildren, Randy, Josh, Brandon McBride, Noah, Jessica, Melissa, Marcella, Ricky Joe, Matt, Beau, Dylan, and Taylor Godinier. She was preceded in death by her mother, father, sister Norma, grandparents, and sons Randy, Mike, and David. A celebration of life for Darlene McBride Godinier, Saturday, January 29, 1 to 3 p.m. at the Raccoon River Park Nature Lodge. Memorial cards and contributions may be presented at the celebration of life. Hamilton's Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. And Ryan Fred Smith of Urbandale. Born April 25, 1972, he was a great son, brother, uncle, and friend. He passed away, surrounded by his loving family, January 21st at Iowa Methodist Hospital. Ryan fought many health issues. In 93, he became paralyzed from the waist down due to an auto accident. Later on, he became diabetic. In the latter years of his life, he fought infections where that battle was lost. He had a great attitude, and he never complained about his fate in life. Ryan attended Olmsted Elementary, Urbandale Junior High, and Dowling Catholic High School. He enjoyed wrestling and soccer. Ryan leaves a grieving family, mother Jane Barnes and father Ronald Smith, devoted sister Dawn Garrett, stepmother Carol Smith. Ryan was a true family man and a friend. He'll be missed by his sister, Dawn, and husband, Corey Garrett, and their family. He took an active part in raising his nieces and nephews and becoming a second dad to them. Ryan is survived by his nephew, Daniel DJ Hollingsworth, his wife, Danny, and their children, Audrey and Hudson, his niece, Brianna Smith, and her children, Natalia and Harley Wright. Ryan was an avid fan of the Miami Dolphins, the Iowa Hawkeyes, and the Iowa Barnstormers. He had a passion for cooking, admiring, and polishing the car of his dreams, his 2015 Dodge Challenger RT. Visitation, Sunday, January 30, 5 to 7 p.m. at Westover Funeral Home. Mass will take place at St. Pius Catholic Church, Monday, January 31 at 11 a.m., burial at the Des Moines Masonic Cemetery in Des Moines. In lieu of flowers, the family asked that donations be made to the Spinal Cord Society. That's at 19051 County Highway Number 1, Fergus Falls, Minnesota.
Okay, and now we will turn to sports. Women's college basketball. Clark breaks another Big Ten record in Iowa's win at PSU. This is by Dargan Southard of the Des Moines Register. Playing for the second time in 3 days amid an even busier week is no easy task, even if the opponents aren't daunting on paper. Iowa women's basketball had to navigate such a challenge Tuesday evening. The number 24 Hawkeyes needed a half to warm up at Penn State, but everything after the break fell in line with what was expected. Iowa's emphatic run to start the third quarter buried the Lady Lions and propelled the Hawkeyes to 107-79 win at the Bryce Jordan Center. Iowa, 13-4, 7-1 Big Ten Conference, has now won six straight to stay a half game out of first place in the league. Squeezing in this rescheduled game from December 30th meant Iowa had to trek east on a one-day prep after beating Illinois on Sunday in a game that was also not on the original slate. The Lady Lions countered Iowa for a half, preventing that game, clinching surge Lisa Bluder's squad loves to deliver. But Penn State, 9-9 and 3-5, couldn't keep the door closed forever. The Hawkeyes busted through with a 12-1 run to begin the second half, transforming a modest 52-47 lead into a robust 64-48 advantage. Eight of those points arrived via McKenna Warnock, who exited in the first half with a hand injury, but returned with authority when Iowa needed her most. 12 of Warnock's game-high 25 points came in the momentum-snatching third quarter as the Hawkeyes ballooned their way to a lead to 20 before closing even stronger. The usual contributors shined as well. Although it wasn't the most efficient shooting night for Caitlin Clark, she still drained four trays and poured in 20 points, all while delivering a career-high 17 assists. That figure shattered the Big Ten mark for most assists in a conference game. Iowa as a whole broke its program record for assists in a game with 37. "That's Iowa basketball at its finest right there," Clark said. "We love it." Monitoring the record books is becoming a regular thing each time Clark takes the floor. Clark finished three rebounds short of her fifth triple-double of the season. Double-digit assistants also arrived from Monica Cinzano, 24 points, and Gabby Marshall, 12 points, who helped Iowa to another strong three-point effort with four trays. The Hawkeyes have seemingly shook off the long-range woes that plagued them earlier in the season. On Sunday, Bluder opened her Illinois post-game press gathering by stating, "We came in here, took care of business." Tuesday featured a similar objective. Iowa took care of business without any drama. Now it's on to Friday's trip to Northwestern. "I feel like we're really getting back to us now," Clark said.
And also from the front page of the Des Moines Register sports section, I got to tell you, they have some a number of just outstanding photos of high school wrestling matches. There's one from between Urbandale and, I'm not sure the other side, Boone. And these young people, the photos, they're in kind of a silhouette, and it just shows these muscly young men flipping each other around. And the photos are just really stunning. I can't get into much more detail than that, except it's their faces are all, their expressions are all intense. And these just wonderfully fit bodies. There's some shots from the West Des Moines Valley Woodward Granger meet, and it's cool to see all of these photos of these young people going for it. Back to our stories. UIC to join Drake and UNI in Missouri Valley Conference. University of Iowa Chicago Athletics, excuse me, I'm going to start that over, Dorothy, because I got ahead of my brain. University of Illinois Chicago Athletics will join the Missouri Valley Conference and Drake and Northern Iowa beginning in the 2022-23 season, UIC announced Wednesday. "It's a great addition for the Valley," MVC Commissioner Jeff Jackson said in a statement. "UIC's combination of academics, location, facilities, financial commitment to athletic success, and leadership will enhance the brand of the MVC and the experiences of our student athletes." UIC, coached by former Michigan assistant Luke Yaklich, I will spell that for you, Y-A-K-L-I-C-H, They're the third school to join the MVC in recent months, and the conference's 12th member institution, but the only one from the Horizon League. Belmont and Murray State will start MVC play in the 2022-23 season as well, after leaving the Ohio Valley Conference. The Flames join three other Illinois schools in the MVC. Those are Bradley, Illinois State, and Southern Illinois. UIC has competed in the Horizon League since the 1994-95 season. It is currently ninth in the conference with a 7-10 record. Murray State is first. Belmont is third in the Ohio Valley. The Flames compete against a couple tough teams in the Horizon. Cleveland State and Oakland both have potential to make the NCAA tournament this season. UIC has appeared in the NCAA tournament three times. Those were in 98, 2002, and 2004, but they hold an 0-3 record after facing Charlotte, Oklahoma, and Kansas. This announcement comes day before Drake men's basketball's last matchup with Loyola Chicago at the Knapp Center. The Ramblers, the top team in the MVC, plan to join the Atlantic in the next season. And the other story from the front page, ex-Iowa QB Tate joining UNI staff. This is written from Dargan Southard, written by Dargan Southard of the Des Moines Register. Drew Tate made his mark as a quarterback in black and gold, morphing into one of Iowa's most noteworthy names under center. Now, Tate is coming back to the state where he's most beloved, just in a different color scheme. Tate has been hired as an assistant coach at Northern Iowa, joining Mark Farley's staff after another off-season of turnover. Tate will likely have some coaching role on UNI's offense, which lost QB coach offensive coordinator Sean Watson to Wolford in mid-January. Tate's personal Twitter account has already gotten a proper makeover, with the UNI logo as his profile picture and the Unidome as his header photo. The connection with the Panthers and coach Mark Farley commenced shortly after the 2021 football season ended. Quote, after the season, I got a text from Coach Farley saying, quote, hey, call me. Tate recalled during an interview this week with the Nebraska Hawks Nest podcast. Quote, so I called him and we talked about some stuff and things like that. It was a process. We did a phone interview, then a Zoom interview, and then I met him down in San Antonio for the coaches' convention. From there, it went to one more phone conversation. Then I hopped in the car and came up north. That's just how this business works. I'm still getting my feet wet, but I basically told Farley, I will walk to Cedar Falls to be back. He trusted me, which is a big deal. Tate's move comes after spending the 2021 season as the quarterback's coach at UT Martin, where the former Iowa star helped guide the Skyhawks to a 10-3 mark with a playoff appearance. Pardon me. His previous coaching stops include the Spring League's Alphas team, the CFL's BC Lions, and Coastal Carolina, where he was the defensive analyst in 2018. Iowa, though, is where Tate's name carries the most value. He played for Kirk Ferentz from 2003 to 2006, starting the final three seasons, and finished with several impressive figures. Tate left Iowa as the program's second best in career touchdown passes at 61. Completions, he had 665 of those. Attempts, he had 1,090. And passing yards, he had 8,292 passing yards. He's also third in Iowa history for the most wins by a starting quarterback at 21 wins. After a brief stint with the St. Louis Rams in 2007 and the Saskatchewan Roughriders in 2008, Tate caught on with the Calgary Stampeders and began a 10-season CFL career in 2009. He won a Grey Cup with the Stampeders in 2014. Now comes time for Tate to transition to his next football opportunity. Quote, the Unidome is awesome. You're indoors. I love it, Tate said on a podcast. Cedar Falls is a great town, and I'm really enjoying it so far. And that was from Dargan Southard of the Des Moines Register.
And we'll continue one more in men's college basketball. Iowa hopes to build from late rally in rematch versus Purdue. This by Dargan Southard. Dateline, Iowa City. The frustration came rushing back to Philip Rebraca as he recounted Iowa's near upset from 8 weeks ago. The Hawkeye men's basketball team had then number two Purdue backpedaling on its home floor, reeling from Iowa's late rally that turned a rout into a tense Big Ten affair. Last game, I felt like we kind of had them, Rebraca said on Tuesday. It was a very close game until the end. Then I fouled out, and that just irritates me as a player and a competitor. As the Hawkeyes ready for Thursday's rematch with now number six Purdue, an 8 p.m. tip inside Carver Hardway Arena, consider Rebraca's words a microcosm of how Iowa views the 77-70 loss on December 3 as it relates to this week's round two. There were several positives that emerged as the Hawkeye nearly erased a 19-point deficit against the Boilermakers' daunting interior presence without injured star Keegan Murray. But Purdue's ability to escape accentuates the need for an even stronger effort this time around. Iowa doesn't want another chance at an eye-popping win to slip away. I'm itching and scratching to get another chance to play these guys, Rebraca said. I'm very excited, and now we're doing it at home. So hopefully we can walk out of here with a win. While last month's Purdue showdown offers hope Iowa can again hang with one of the Big Ten's best, the film isn't an exact blueprint for how Thursday's game might go. For one, Purdue forward Mason Gillis has regained his starting role and heftier workload, neither of which was true in the first matchup. After a four-game suspension to open the season, Gillis was in the fourth game of his return on December 3 and played only 18 minutes off the bench versus Iowa. Hawkeyes coach Fran McCaffrey has noticed a more potent Gillis in Purdue's recent games. Also, and this one works in Iowa's favor, the Hawkeyes didn't have Murray to assist with the daunting challenge around the rim. As dominant as Gillis, all Big Ten forward Trevion Williams and 7'4" giant Zach Edey can be, attacking Purdue with your best weapon on the bench isn't an ideal situation. Consider Murray amped to not have to watch this Purdue showdown in street clothes. It was definitely tough, missing that first game, said Murray, who sat with an ankle injury that December night. Obviously, Mackey in the arena is a tough place to play, and it was a game-time decision. When I finally figured out I wasn't going to play, it obviously hurt a little bit, but I wanted to be on the bench and support our team. Our team played really good that day and gave them a tough match. I just feel like, for me, I want to step up and play with them and just enjoy Thursday's atmosphere with them. As of Tuesday afternoon, roughly 3,500 tickets remained for Thursday's hyped showdown. The Hawkeyes enjoyed the benefits of a sold-out arena in Saturday's 68-51 win over Penn State, and it appears much of that energy has stuck for Purdue, even with Iowa encountering another 8 p.m. weeknight tip. A raucous environment would be an appropriate response given how massive this game could be for the Hawkeyes' resume if they emerge victorious. While Iowa is firmly entrenched in the most recent NCAA tournament bracketologies, McCaffrey's squad is still lacking that monumental signature win. Iowa is 0-3 against ranked teams this season. Going off ESPN's most recent tournament projection, the Hawkeyes are one of just four major conference teams included without an AP top 25 victory. After Thursday, Iowa's remaining games against teams currently ranked in the AP poll are February 3 at number 18 Ohio State, February 22nd versus number 10 Michigan State, and March 6 at number 24 Illinois. At the very least, toppling Purdue would buy some more wiggle room over the regular season's final month as the NCAA tournament lights get brighter. Top 10 victories, even in late January, can carry significant weight on Selection Sunday. There's evidence Iowa won't be overwhelmed by Purdue's prowess, but the Hawkeyes aren't in the mood for another close defeat, emitting progress amid disappointment. "We recognize how good they are," McCaffrey said. "Anything less than your best effort makes it hard, so we've got to be ready to compete."
Now I'm going over to the USA Today money section for a bit before we get into the super soft news. On Moneyline, CDC warns against travel to Caribbean. Federal health officials warned U.S. travelers to avoid nearly every Caribbean island, moving Jamaica, the Dominican Republic, St. Barts, St. Martin, and Guadalupe to its level 4 travel advisory level because of very high levels of COVID. The islands join other Caribbean destinations, including the Bahamas and Aruba, on the CDC's highest COVID-19 risk level. Fiji, Colombia, Costa Rica, Kuwait, Mongolia, Niger, Peru, Romania, Tunisia, and the United Arab Emirates were placed on level 4 Monday. So, Dorothy, I guess that means our Caribbean getaway for girls is out for a while. But thank you for offering to take me to the Bahamas. New home sales are the highest in 10 months. Sales of new single homes in December rose to their highest level in 10 months as buyers snapped up cheaper homes in anticipation of higher interest rates. The increase put the seasonally adjusted annual sales pace at 811,000 for the month, according to the Commerce Department. That's an 11.9% increase over November's figure. And man sues for $63 million for injuries in crash. A Massachusetts man who was left a quadriplegic when his Uber vehicle crashed last year is seeking $63 million in damages in a negligence lawsuit that he filed against the ride-hailing platform. William Good, age 31, of Somerville, alleges in the lawsuit that Uber, quote, failed to appropriately screen, hire, and supervise their driver, resulting in severe and life-changing injuries to Mr. Good. The suit also seeks a jury trial. An Uber spokesperson told the Boston Globe the company could not comment on pending litigation. And another on the front page of the money section of the USA Today, be prepared for credit card costs to rise through the year. Several interest rate hikes are expected. The Federal Reserve is on a mission to cool off demand and drive down inflation. And yes, you're going to face higher interest rates on your credit cards as a result. Federal rate hikes tend to be passed along to credit card holders within a month or two. If the Federal Reserve makes its first move to raise short-term rates at its next policy meeting in mid-March, as some expect, you could be looking at higher credit card rates as soon as April or May. Card issuers have some flexibility, particularly with new customers, but credit card rates typically track the federal fund rate quite closely, said Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst for creditcards.com and bankrate.com. Most consumers already know that it's not cheap to borrow by pulling out plastic or swiping the credit card app on your phone. Interest rate hike should spur credit card holders to act. The rate hikes ahead should give consumers one more reason to pay off their high-cost credit card debt and put a limit on how much they're willing to borrow by tapping into a line of credit on a credit card. The average card rate is 16.13%. Credit card rates vary based on your credit history, with those with lowest credit scores paying the highest interest. Credit card debt is already very expensive, and it will probably become even more so in 2022. Credit card margins have already been creeping up. For example, the current 16.13% average is 12.88 percentage points above the prime rate, which is close to a record high spread between the two. The prime rate today is 3.25. Back in 2010, the average credit card rate was 10.89 percentage points above the prime rate. The prime rate then was also at 3.25. Most credit cards today don't offer fixed rates. They're variable rates that go up or down as short-term interest rates move up or down. The high end of the range, what people with lower credit scores pay, averages about 24%. The annual percentage rates, for example, for an AARP Travel Rewards MasterCard range from 16.74 to 20.74 to 25.74 based on your credit worthiness. 0% introductory APR is being offered for 15 months on balance transfers made within 45 days of account opening. The balance transfer fee is either $5 or 5% of the amount of each transfer, whichever is greater. The redesigned My GM Rewards card has a 0% introductory rate for the first 9 months. After that, the annual rate on the card will range from 14.99 to 24.99%, depending on your credit score. The interest rates are variable and could go up or down in the future based on shifts in the prime rate. If some forecasts are accurate, the Fed could raise short-term rates by a quarter of a percentage point, as many as four times or more in 2022. That means that interest rates on credit cards could ultimately go up on average to around 17% or higher by the end of the year. Those with low credit scores could be looking at rates of 25% or higher on the average by the end of the year. It's not a huge extra cost for borrowers, but it is extra money that's going out the door. And some borrowers might want to reconsider how much they're using their credit cards if they're not paying that bill off in full each month. The minimum monthly payment would go up by $4 a month, $48 a year. If someone sees their rate go up from 16.13 to 17.13 and has a balance of around $5,000 on their credit card. The real issue here is that credit card rates are already very high. If someone has a rate of 16.13, just making only minimum payments would keep someone in debt for 194 months, or a bit more than 16 years. And the consumer in this example would end up paying $6,160 in interest if they were holding a $5,525 balance in credit card debt at 16.13%. At 17.13, it would take a consumer 197 months to pay down the debt, making only minimum payments. And the overall cost of their interest goes up to $6,577, or an extra $417. That's almost a 7% increase in the cost of interest over many years if you're only making those minimum payments. Here are some options consumers can consider. The 0% introductory offer. Some credit cards continue to offer a 0% offer or a 0% balance transfer offer, even as the Fed is set to raise rates. A balance transfer can help you pay down debt, while the 0% rate remains in place for, say, 9 months, 15 months, or even up to 21 in some cases. A long 20-month 0% offer is being made on the Wells Fargo Reflect, Citi Simplicity, and Citi Diamond Preferred cards, according to creditcards.com. After the 0% promo, Wells Fargo Reflect will charge 12.99% to 24.99%. Citi Simplicity goes from 14.74 to 24.74, and the Citi Diamond Preferred card goes from 13.74 to 23.74%. Many consumers may be confused and wrongly believe that they'd get stuck paying a higher rate on all their debt if they don't pay off the entire balance while the zero rate is offered. That's often true with deferred interest programs, such as when you open a credit card to buy furniture or cover a medical procedure. Interest is retroactively applied to your entire original purchase amount, even if you leave just $1 unpaid by the time the regular rates hit under a deferred interest plan. But consumers are not going to be billed for interest retroactively if they do not pay off their card's entire balance, while a 0% balance transfer rate is in place. You would only owe the higher rate on the remaining balance. Sometimes the 0% transfer rate only applies to balance transfers made within the first 60 days or the first 120 days of opening the account. So pay very close attention to the various rates in place. You also typically need to have good credit to qualify for that 0% limited offer, such as a FICO score of 670 or higher. Also, pay attention to any balance transfer fees. Some cards have an intro balance fee transfer fee of 3 or 5%. You could be paying $150 to $250 bucks to transfer a $5,000 balance. But that could be worth it if you make sure to pay down a good chunk of the debt during the 1% or 0% offer before those higher rates hit. You're often required to make a minimum monthly payment each month, while the 0% intro rate applies. That's typically based on 1% of the balance. Let's say you owe $5,000 and you only make minimum payments of 1% on the balance each month. You would still owe $4,000 at the end of those 21 months, and then the interest rate could skyrocket. To truly pay down your debt, you would need to make far more than the minimum payment during the 0% time frame. Also, if you miss a payment, it's possible with some cards that the 0% rate will no longer be available to you, and you'll face those much higher rates sooner than later. Should I try to get a personal loan? Personal loans are available at banks, credit unions, and online lenders. Some offer rates as low as 2.5 to 5.99 APR. Many consumers are turning to such loans to consolidate their credit card debt and lock in lower rates. Unlike a credit card, you're going to have to pay off a personal loan during a set period of time, so monthly payments would be higher than that for a card. One offer noted that at 5.99%, you would pay nearly $24 a month for each $1,000 borrowed for 48 months. Payments are the same each month based on a fixed interest rate and a fixed repayment timeline. But here's the deal. Higher rates are charged to those who have weaker credit scores. Some personal loans on the market now can be 20 to nearly 36%. The current average is around 10.28%, according to Bankrate.com. And you do need to factor in the cost of fees. Some of them have fees and some don't. Rossman noted that origination fees are common, ranging from nothing to up to 8% of the amount you are borrowing. You'd want to try to improve your credit score before borrowing by making sure to pay bills on time and avoid borrowing too much on your credit cards, keeping the outstanding balances below 30% of your total credit limit. And finally, what if I feel like I can never get out of debt? You can talk to a nonprofit financial counselor. Look at your credit card statement for information on how to contact a credit counseling service. Some statements offer a number that will give you contact information for those services. Farmington Hills, Michigan-based Green Path Financial Wellness, a nonprofit counselor, gives details on its services at greenpath.org. The first rate hike by the Fed is expected to be small, but borrowers need to take into account that more rate hikes are likely ahead, and the cost of borrowing will be going up.
Up, up, and away. Okay, well, we're going to go back to another little bit of news before we get to the fun stuff. This from the Des Moines Register. Biden selects 6 lawyers for U.S. prosecutor posts. President Joe Biden nominated a diverse group of 6 lawyers to run U.S. attorneys' offices across the country, his latest picks for the top law enforcement positions. The nominees, announced by the White House on Wednesday, would run the federal prosecutor's offices in Alaska, Connecticut, Montana, New Hampshire, New Mexico, and Utah. They would include the first woman to serve as U.S. attorney in Utah and the first black woman to serve as U.S. attorney in Connecticut. The Justice Department's 93 U.S. attorneys, who are responsible for federal criminal prosecutions in their respective districts, are likely to be central efforts to combat violent crime. Biden has now nominated 43 people to serve as U.S. attorneys, positions that have been filled for months by acting U.S. attorneys. The candidates were chosen for their devotion to enforcing the law, their professionalism, their experience and credentials in this field, their dedication to pursuing equal justice for all, and their commitment to the independence of the Department of Justice, the White House said. The nominees include Vanessa Avery, a former federal prosecutor who is now top lawyer in the Connecticut Attorney General's office, to be the U.S. attorney there. Since 2021, she has served as the chief of the Division of Enforcement and Public Protection as the state attorney's general office. She was an associate state attorney general and worked as an assistant U.S. attorney in Connecticut. If confirmed, Avery would be the first black woman to serve as U.S. attorney in Connecticut. The last Senate confirmed U.S. attorney in the state, John Durham, currently serves as special counsel overseeing the investigation into the origins of the Russian probe that shadowed Donald Trump's presidency for years. Biden also nominated Trina Higgins, a longtime federal prosecutor, to serve as U.S. attorney in Utah. If confirmed, she would be the first woman to serve as U.S. attorney for Utah. The Democratic president tapped Jesse Laslovich, a health care executive and former state legislator, to be the U.S. attorney in Montana. Since 2017, Laslovich has worked as a regional vice president for the SCL Health Montana-Wyoming region. Before that, he was the chief legal counsel for the Montana Commissioner of Securities and Insurance and worked as a state prosecutor and special assistant U.S. attorney. He served in Montana's state Senate from 2005 to 2010 and in the state House of Representatives from 2001 to 2004. S. Lane Tucker, an attorney in the Anchorage office of the law firm Stowe Reeves LLP, is nominated to be the U.S. attorney in Alaska. The former federal prosecutor worked at the Justice Department in the 1990s and early 2000s. Alexander M. M. Ubalas, a federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Mexico, is nominated to run that office. Ubalas has worked in the office since 2016 and was previously an assistant district attorney in Albuquerque and Santa Fe. The Biden administration also nominated Jane E. Young, the Deputy Attorney General for the New Hampshire Department of Justice, to be the U.S. attorney in that state. Young has held a variety of roles in the New Hampshire Department of Justice since she joined the office in 1992. And now we'll turn to Iowa Life. It's a little more fun here. After hiatus, pizzeria Mad Meatball reopens downtown. This is from the Des Moines Register by Kim Norville. Nearly three decades after closing its East Village location, the Mad Meatball Pizzeria and Sub Shop is back. Pizza, pasta, wings, sandwiches, and its signature meatballs are served in its new spot at 210 Southwest 11th Street. Fans of the family-friendly, sports-themed restaurant have had a long wait. Mad Meatball first opened in 2013 at 401 Southeast 5th Street, now home to Rita's Cantina. It shut down in April 29, with plans to open in the Link at Gray Station apartment building in spring 2020. While leaving the building we've called home for so many years wasn't an easy decision. We know that this prime location at Link will give us great connection to downtown residents and visitors as well as more space to grow, co-owner Andy Hartman said in a news release. Our improvements took longer than anticipated, but we're extremely excited to reopen and welcome back our many die-hard Mad fans. The new 3,000 square foot space at Link, located on the southeast corner of Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway and Southwest 11th Street, has customized booths and high-top tables, a three-sided bar, and a patio with a view of the downtown Des Moines skyline. It will be open from 11 a.m. to midnight on Fridays and Saturdays, and 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Sunday through Thursday. Mad Meatball joins other Link businesses, Craft Brew, a 60-handle tap room and Iowa Spine Plus Performance chiropractic unit. The Link apartment building was Hubble Realty Company's first development in Gray Station, a 75-acre neighborhood on the southern edge of downtown. Gray Station ultimately will occupy most of the empty land south of Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway between Southwest 11th and Southwest 16th Street. So that's that. And then the works of Vincent van Gogh are headed to Des Moines. And here's what we know so far. This by Susan Stapleton. A dramatic exhibit of the works of Vincent van Gogh is coming to Des Moines this year, sometime, somewhere. Without revealing details about where or when, Lighthouse Immersive teased the 500,000 square foot show that visited cities from New York City to Kansas City. The exhibit Immersive Van Gogh takes visitors on a journey through the Dutch post-impressionist artist's art in digital format. Works showcased from Van Gogh's 2,000 plus catalog include Manger de Pomme de Terre, that's The Potato Eaters, painted in 1885, Nuit Étoilée, that's Starry Night in 1889, Les Tournesols, that's Sunflowers, 1888, and La Chambre à Coucher, that's The Bedroom, 1889. Exhibit-goers can expect to relive how Van Gogh first saw the scenes before setting paintbrush to canvas. The images move and merge, coming to life with rotating windmill blades and birds flying across a scene and morphs from the images to the painted work. The exhibit is an hour-long, timed entry, walk-through experience with safety in mind. In cities it has visited, white circles illuminated on the floor showed viewers where to stand to maintain social distance. Creative director and Italian film producer Massimiliano Sicardi created the look and feel of the exhibit with music by Italian multimedia composer Luca Longobardi. In 2021, the exhibit drew more than 200,000 visitors. In Des Moines, fans can sign up at the Des Moines svangogh.com to learn when tickets go on sale.
I've had friends do that in other cities. Have you? There are two versions of these Van Gogh immersive experiences. Basically, for our blind listeners, which is all of you, they have a giant room, and they need white walls, top, bottom, and all the sides. It needs to be very, very big, and it's all... This stuff is projected around you, walls, ceilings, and floors, and then the music, and then it... Anyway, it's supposed to be incredible. I will say that I signed up for the Omaha Van Gogh, and I was supposed to get an email when they'd be opening. Still nothing. And I signed up in February of last year. So... They tease you on when this is coming, and it usually takes a really long time for it to get here. But when it does get here, Dorothy, would you join me in figuring out audio description for a listener tour for this? I bet we could do it, because you have to do the French words. I can't do the French words. So anyway, when that comes, it'll be Dorothy and I. So also on the life section, John Mellencamp talks Springsteen, art, aging, and his new album. If a squirrel chews through the line, we're in trouble, John Mellencamp says by way of introduction. He's calling from, quote, on top of the mountain in Northern California, not literally, but in his home. And for a guy often pegged as prickly, he's immediately disarming. He's funny and blunt, not exactly the type who would make an ideal conversationalist over a few drinks. Or, as it turns out, on the other end of the phone for an hour. Mellencamp is a rightfully celebrated career. From the early days of Johnny Cougar, a name he says, quote, was forced on me, and I don't like anybody telling me what to do, through 80s MTV staples like Pink Houses, Hurts So Good, and Small Town, Rootsy Zigzags, Paper in Fire, Get a Leg Up, and Wild Night, a shadowy musical written with Stephen King, the Ghost Brothers of Darkland County, and voluminous accolades, the Songwriters Hall of Fame, ASCAP Founders Award, and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, just a few, his accomplishments overwhelm you. On January 21, Mellencamp unveiled his first album in 5 years. Called Strictly a One-Eyed Jack, it features a dozen songs packed with themes of mortality and dense lyrics, guided by the album's protagonist, a dangerous old man, i.e. the One-Eyed Jack, which Mellencamp will further explain. He also enlisted an old friend for a trio of songs, a kindred spirit in wistful storytelling, Bruce Springsteen. The album's first single, Wasted Days, finds the pair in a reflective state. Who's counting now these last remaining years? How many minutes do we have here? The duo romps a little more on the easy swingin' Did You Say Such a Thing, but also warn the forecast is severe on the piano and accordion laden A Life Full of Rain. In his conversation with USA Today, Mellencamp, who recently canceled his tour because of COVID obstacles, for the third time, he says with a sigh, delves into his long relationship with Springsteen, the portentous themes on the new album. Question. There's being much made of you and Bruce singing together on the record for the first time, but you've known each other for decades. What took so long for this collaboration to happen? Mellencamp. Bruce and I have known each other since we were kids, but I was always kind of considered the poor man's Springsteen. That didn't bother me. I thought it was just lazy journalism. But Bruce and I have grown to be almost brothers, and I love the guy. He's been an inspiration, and I told him, you made me work harder. I got to compete with that. Bruce was a blessing to me all along. Maybe I didn't see it that way, but I do now. Question. Where did you record these three songs? Answer. Bruce came to Indiana and stayed at my house. I have a studio nearby. He stayed for 4 or 5 days. He's a good guy. He's a sweet guy, and I think the world of him. We come from very similar backgrounds, small towns. I think I had it a little easier than Bruce as a kid. I had a motorcycle. My dad was vice president of an electrical firm. I never wanted for money. I was singing in rock bands and playing in bars when I was 12 years old. I was making money. I was the best dressed kid in my class. Question. Wasted Days obviously keys in on the passing of time, a theme that seems to run throughout the album. What prompted this rumination? Did the isolation of the first year of the pandemic play into your songwriting? Answer. That song was written before the pandemic. This record was made half before the pandemic and half during. I figure I've got about 10 summers left. I'm 70 years old. I've had 70 summers, and it's just a math problem. When you're a kid, summer goes on forever. But on the slide rule, you start pushing it toward time, and you realize that 70 summers have come and gone, and you don't want to waste them. I'll never perform in the summer again, because I want to enjoy the summer. I don't want to feel obligated to put on a show or travel. You're talking to the luckiest guy in the world. I've been smoking since I was 14. I was born with spina bifida, and the other four kids they did surgery on at the same time as me died. Luck is nothing but thinking you're lucky. I always thought that I was lucky. Question. Tell me about the album name and title track. Answer. The most dangerous card in the deck is the One-Eyed Jack. There are only two of them, so generally, if you get a One-Eyed Jack, he has his sword behind his back. And the protagonist tells you in the first song, I always lie to strangers, don't trust me. I'm going to lie to you, and I know you're going to lie to me. And the whole thing comes to a head in the last verse, which says, this world is run by men much more crooked than me. He's telling you, I know I'm a scoundrel, but the people you pay attention to are bigger liars than me. Hopefully, what the record tells people when they realize this is one guy's voice telling you his life story is that it's good not to give a blank. Question. Your son, Spock, or Speck, painted the album cover. How much did you inspire his talent? Mellencamp. Speck grew up watching me paint, and he graduated from the Rhode Island School of Design. His paintings are so much better than mine, and I say, blank you. You're 25 years old. Now, I do have to say, IRIS policy is that if it's written, we say it, but they actually have typed expletive instead of whatever John Mellencamp said. And question, you mentioned that you had to cancel your tour again, but when you're out there, do you still get any joy in playing the old hits? Answer, I don't placate my audience. I'll do a few of those songs, but only because I want to. A couple of them I feel obligated to do. I used to really not like playing Jack and Diane until a few years ago. I saw a whole football stadium of people singing that song. 80,000 people singing at a football game. They aren't just John Mellencamp fans. They're just singing it. What a surprise to me, because I was a kid when I wrote it. And really, oh yeah, life goes on, long after the thrill of living is gone. It's not a positive message, and people sing it like it's the national anthem. And question. So, with a tour, without a tour looming, what does the rest of your year look like now? Mellencamp, I'm going back to Indiana, into my art studio, and I'm going to continue to paint. I have 55 paintings in a museum in Florida. A museum is called the Museum of Art in DeLand, Florida. Though I might also make another record. The funny thing about songwriting is when you're open to suggestion from your muse, that's when it happens. I have hundreds of songs that aren't recorded, so we'll see. I have never planned anything in my life.
Okay, before we go to Dear Abby, I can't resist. I have to do one comic strip, Garfield, the cat. Garfield is lying flat on his back, and his owner is standing looking at him. And the owner says, and it's three spaces. First one, he says, sometimes I worry. In the next space, the cat is lying flat on his back, and the owner says, what if I sit down and forget how to stand up? In the third one, the cat is still lying flat on his back, and the owner says, what if I forget how to walk? And the cat, the bubble, says, too bad you can't forget how to talk. So with that, we're going to go to Dear Abby. Father unsure about reuniting with incarcerated addict son. Dear Abby, my 38-year-old son is in jail for meth. He's been an addict for many years. I tried several times to help him, but he always relapsed. He has been in rehab. His mother and I divorced when he was 7. He was a great kid until the divorce. After that, he became distant and wouldn't talk much to me. His mother tried to make up for the divorce by doing everything for him. When I wanted him to do something like his homework, he would just sit and stare. I couldn't punish him because I was afraid he wouldn't want to come to my place when it was my weekend to have him. I did things with him and tried to show him I loved him, but I think he blamed me for the divorce. It was my wife who wanted it. I don't think he ever loved me like a son normally loves his father, the way I loved and respected mine. He rejected any advice I tried to offer and paid no attention when I tried to teach him something. I'm trying to decide if I want to contact him. I feel like I have always had to do the heavy lifting to try to have a relationship with him, and he made no effort at all to sustain one with me. If I never heard from him again, I really wouldn't miss him. All he has ever been is a taker. So I'm asking, should I bother trying to get in contact with him while he is in jail? And that is from a frustrated father in Texas. Abby's reply, dear father, your son is sick, an addict. That he is in jail will hopefully mean he can attain sobriety. Reach out to him one more time. He may believe you deserted him and his mother because she allowed him to believe it, which would explain his attitude toward you all these years. It might be of some benefit to him to be reminded that you love him and care about his well-being. Once he is clean, He may have a different attitude where you are concerned. If not, at least you tried.
Right, that dear Abby shouldn't mess around. Well, a little weather recap. Today we're looking at a high of 31 in central Iowa, a low of -1. Thick cloud cover today, winds west-northwest 7 to 14. Mostly clear and bitterly cold tonight, but mostly cloudy in Des Moines. It says limit time outdoors if possible. Also, DART is still offering free rides to warming centers throughout the metro. So if you need one of those, you can give us a call. We'll give you some information. Tomorrow, it'll in central Iowa, high of 17. Warms up a bit. On Saturday, high of 34. Sunday, high of 30. Monday, high of 44 and a low of 32. So we'll melt some of this stuff. That concludes the reading of the Des Moines Register for Thursday, January 27th, my father's 92nd birthday. Happy birthday, Dad. I'm Mary Frances, and my partner at the microphone has been the illustrious Dorothy Hockenberry. And earlier you heard Linda Lundgren and Twyla Glenn. You can access IRIS programs on any computer, smartphone, or Alexa. We have our own Alexa thing. You can hear us on Iowa Public Television. If you'd like to learn more, just give us a call, 243-6833. And from anywhere in Iowa, you can call toll-free, 1-877-404-4747. And as always, you can check out our website, iowaradioreading.org. And also there, you can click and listen to any of our podcasts. Dorothy's coming in to attack me. Special thanks to our broadcast partners, Iowa Public Radio, Iowa PBS, and music partner bensound.com that lets us use the music for free. But most of all, thank you for listening to your IRIS. What, Dorothy?
Mary Frances, you are wonderful and impossible.
I am, and I love you too. I learned it all from you, girl. Okay, thanks for listening to IRIS. Enjoy the rest of your day.